Hello and welcome to the My Teenage Band podcast with me, Nick Taylor. This is a brand new podcast in which I talk to people of all sorts of different fields about their young attempts at musical stardom. So, who the hell am I and why am I bringing yet another podcast into the world? Well, like I said, my name's Nick and I've worked in radio for the last decade, but throughout my teens and 20s, I played in bands and they were basically some of the most joyful, important and formative days of my life. So I thought it would be fun to chat to other people about all the highs and lows of playing music when they were younger. So over the coming weeks, I'll be talking to writers, actors, illustrators, comedians, fellow podcasters and broadcasters and more. There's lots and lots of great chats coming up. And I should say, since this and all forthcoming episodes were recorded during various stages of lockdown in the absolute hell year that is 2020, there may be occasional techie glitches here and there as I tried to get to grips with doing this whole thing myself from home, but I think I figure it out eventually. So for this very first episode of the podcast, I'm actually talking to not one, but two people, Cherie Percy and Fliss Kitson, who in the early noughties played ferocious feminist punk in and around Norwich under the name Violet Violet. So not everyone I'm going to be talking to on this podcast got particularly far with their band, but Violet Violet actually did do pretty well. They toured across Europe and the States. They actually recorded and released two albums and a handful of EPs and singles. They were picked as one of Steve Lamacq's favourite bands. They did sessions at Maida Vale. They really did do remarkably well. So it was great to chat to Cherie and Fliss to find out all about what it was like to be a teenager in a band reaching such dizzy heights. So Cherie is a wonderful music journalist and broadcaster. She writes under the name Cherie Amour for several great music publications, including Gold Flake Paint, She Shreds, DIY Magazine, and The Skinny. Plus, she hosts The Other Woman Show on Soho Radio every Thursday. Fliss Kitson is an amazing artist and illustrator, and she actually still plays drums professionally for legendary post-punk band The Nightingales, who count amongst their fans legendary comic Stuart Lee. So here are Cherie Percy and Fliss Kitson to talk all about Violet Violet. If we could just start by just talking about how Violet Violet started and what was the story behind that?
It's a good story. So Fliss and I met at sixth form. I was already playing in a band.
Rockastella.
Brilliant, thank you. Fliss and I knew each other from sixth form, but we were kind of, you know, on the peripheries of the playground, thinking that girl looks cool, because I should say we came from separate high schools. So Fliss had her best friend as her wing woman and I had my best friend as my wing woman. But both of us knew that we kind of played instruments. And Fliss came to one of the Rockastella shows at the ferry boat in Norwich. And at that point, that was the kind of moment where we were like, I was really unhappy with our drummer anyway. He couldn't do a drum roll. So that was annoying.
Shout out to John if you're listening.
Yeah.
So I was quite ready to
lose
that.
Shots fired already. Good.
And then I think, we must have been running it simultaneously. Like, I can't really, or maybe it just like clattered to an end, the other one. But there was a battle of the bands in true Jason and the Pussycat style at sixth form at the local bowling alley. And we decided we were going to do that. So Fliss and I came together. We roped in a couple of our other friends because we just thought it'd be really fun to be a like ultimate, you know, musical girl gang. And I think we only wrote maybe two songs and we did a cover. And I'm going to say
really bad cover.
That was our first set.
What was the cover?
Yeah. California Dreaming.
Amazing.
But the end of the story is that we did come second in that battle of the bands. We lost out to a band called, actually it's such an awful name, I feel like you should just scrub this, but they were called Brutal Abortion.
Wow.
And they were like a heavy metal band and all their grands came to see them play.
Great.
But yeah, we came close. We came well close. Anything to add, Felicity? Did I miss anything, do you think?
Well, we did form the band for the Battle of the Bands, mainly to beat the boys at sixth form who were also forming a band to become the Battle of the Bands. That kind of spurred us on, just to beat the boys. And we did beat those boys.
Great. Okay. What was the boys' band called that you were, that were sort of your big rivals?
Swift.
They were swiftly out of there.
Yeah, get out of town, Swifties. I think various members of the band were dating various members of Violet.
Oh my
Violet,
gosh,
actually.
You're so right.
I know that you ended up, by the end of the band, you were a two-piece. So how many were you when you first did that Battle of the Bands?
Yeah, we were five.
Five, wow. Nice, you really whittled it down. It's great.
We did. Yeah. I can't remember if we wrote it in the press release or if someone wrote it about us, that like we were the loudest as a two. So yeah, that for us was like, we're very happy about that. We bowed out with that. Yeah,
right.
Definitely. Right. A lot of the members, when we were a five, it was kind of fun, but it was quite obvious that me and Cherie were a bit more serious about it. Mm.
There was definitely a special spark, like the two of us, I think. And I don't think the girls would mind us saying that at all.
And so when you first started, what were the kind of influences and what was it that you really kind of brought you guys together musically?
I'd say it was definitely Riot Girl music, first and foremost, like massive Sleater Kinney fans. It's really the reason I became a drummer as well. That music and seeing women rock out and being inspired by that. And we both had similar opinions on that. And Hole as well, were a big, the grunge, a lot of grunge.
Oh, make me over. I found that I could scream, and Fliss really encouraged that and was like, this is great, we should just scream on every song. Yeah. Which is fine. There was one in particular called Queens of the Scene, which was very mean. We actually later in our career got into a bit of trouble for being such a mean sort of gossipy band.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, we were very bitchy.
Yeah. But that song I quite like that song. It's quite cool. And the guitar and the drums are quite, like sort of early era grunge, like very stripped back, which obviously changed as we played together. I'm trying to think if there are any lads that we... The Hives, I guess, but maybe that was later on.
Sure, yeah.
That was definitely later on, yeah. I don't think we really listened to a lot of men.
Because what year was it that you first formed?
I think it was 2002.
2002. Okay,
today, yeah. They got to a point where I think it was when I was like 13 or something, and I'm just going to come out and say that I'm a massive Hanson fan.
Right.
And
of course,
naturally that fits right in with this conversation.
Any opportunity to put that out,
that's
there.
Right. But no, for me that was quite formative, because they were a band that played their own instruments and there was three of them. So that was when my friends and I at the time were like, okay, we're each gonna pick an instrument and we're gonna learn, and we're gonna not just be the girls that write pop songs, but we're gonna write the whole song and the music behind it as well.
Tell me about your first ever rehearsal. What was that like, the first time you guys actually got into a room together and started playing? And how did that feel?
I remember we had a ritual which started straight away, which was to go to Morrison's and get a load of muffins and stick them in the middle of the room and with cups of tea. Yeah. And I think this is weird, but we started with vocals first and melodies.
But I think because both you and I were like with our little lyric books, that probably felt more natural. I don't know. Yeah.
And our first song ever was called The Go-Go Song.
Yeah. Still an absolute tune. Yeah.
Great.
It basically goes go, 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 go everywhere, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, oh, I haven't listened to that for a very long time.
Say your go, say your go,
say your go.
Oh wow,
say your go.
Yeah.
So that's like proper. That was like proper girl group, like 60s girl group style.
That's right.
Like almost doo-wop.
Yeah, but that's basically the crux of how we start. Yeah, it was always lyric based and melody based, and then we, and then Cherie would come up with a few chords, maybe to start
kind of
with,
loosely fit behind. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'd play a couple of drums.
Nice.
It was really, yeah, it was quite minimal, wasn't it, to start with?
It seems to me that you guys, like, took it all pretty seriously straight away in terms of how you actually approached songwriting and everything like that. And I think, would you say that you guys were pretty prolific straight away? Because I, one of the things I find really fascinating about the experience of being in a band when you're when you are a teenager, when I listen back to some of the stuff that me and my friends did in our very first band, I'm sort of amazed, certainly not necessarily by the quality of the stuff, but just how much we were willing to just write, and we were we were far less self-conscious about it. Would you say that's kind of accurate about how it felt for you guys?
Yeah, we were serial songwriters. Like, we both had notebooks just jam-packed with words and ideas, and so I'd say that's true. And we also, I guess prior to Bitchbox being released, had stacks of EPs that we worked on as well.
There was kind of no wall up, which is amazing. We never overthought anything, and you know, and we wanted to write about the boys we hated or the people we had crushes on or horrible girls and whatever. And it was, yeah, just kind of a, like, we just wrote whatever we were thinking at the time, and we probably wouldn't do that now. To you, I haven't seen you for a while, and I missed you when you were gone, girl. You sucker. I'll see you later. You said to call, and I don't know if I love you anymore. Slip right back.
So tell me about your first gig.
Was it the battle? It was the Battle of the Bands,
it
right?
It was, yeah. Right.
And we all wore a violet item of clothing.
Right.
That's important.
Because we thought we should coordinate.
I remember being nervous because I had one pedal at the time, and it was like...
And a corset on.
I mean, yeah, I was nervous about that. I had like this monster Zoom pedal thing that like had all the sounds in it, and it was so clunky, and like I think at one point, you know, when it goes on to like the other sound, you're like, oh no, not that one, and then back to the flange.
Emergency flange at all times.
Yeah. And we were quite ambitious, I think, as well, so we definitely didn't start in a rudimentary way. We were like straight in there, like, what theatrics will we have and which effects will we use? And
that's really cool.
Yeah, it was definitely, we felt like it was a stage show. Like
yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. We were very much like, we will entertain you.
Yeah.
And also our second gig was the school pantomime.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay. Yes. Tell me about that.
Well, the sixth form, sorry, had done a pantomime.
Right.
Awful. And we were, do you remember
by,
this?
Yes, and by the way, none of us were in the pantomime, so we were just like this freak accompaniment.
And we were like, we'll play it. Yeah, we'll play, totally. And we came on, it was in a boxing ring.
I was just going to say that. Wow. Here we are on like a weird sort of stage.
We came onto the boxing ring and played the three songs that we had. I think everyone was just like, whoa,
why is
what
this
are they
happening?
Doing?
Yeah.
Was this incorporated into like the narrative of the show?
No,
was it just sort of the halftime entertainment?
Yeah, basically that, exactly. Because I'm pretty sure it was like, it was Christmas time. I was wearing a Christmas hat.
Well, the teachers really liked us.
So
that's probably why we got away with it. And we were just like, we'll play some songs.
Yeah.
Rock out. And everyone
also
was like,
really
oh
loud.
My God.
Yeah,
baby
yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, I've got a memory. We got a real gig at a pub. There was a guitar teacher there. where Fliss was learning to play drums or having lessons, and he had a band and he asked our band to support him. And I feel like that was our first ever Norwich gig.
Right.
So that was like the kind of initiation of like, oh my goodness, there's this other cityscape and there are real bands out here and we can play at pubs and, you know. And I remember us at that time, we were like making our own posters and stuff, and I designed it with a little Palmer Violet strip and then wrote Violet in the other font. But yeah, it was like the Blueberry, which I don't even think exists anymore now.
I realise, actually, I haven't actually asked the story behind the name. Is there a story behind the name?
Yeah. There's two stories behind the name. Yeah. One that's real and one that's false, but that we say.
Great.
That we used to say,
okay.
Anyway.
You could try both out on me and I could try and tell which one is real and fake, which one is fake.
Okay.
Or is it actually kind of obvious?
We'll see. First one is, we wrote a list of all the words we liked.
Mm-hmm.
Ribbon was Cherie's
top contender. Still, great. Wish we'd been called Ribbon.
And then we just literally doubled it. So ribbon,
uh-huh.
Bikes. I don't know what other words.
Yeah.
You like.
Some were
muffin.
Some were like Cadillac Moon.
Oh, mixing it up. Yeah.
And then the other story is because we're huge fans of Veruca Salt, and they got their name from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, of course. And in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Veruca Salt's mum or dad says,
"Violet, you're turning Violet.
When she blows up
with the bubble gum.
Mm.
Yeah.
I want that to be the real story. Is that
me
is
too?
That the one? But it's Muffin, it's Muffin, list. Isn't it?
It's Muffin, Muffin.
It's Muffin,
yeah,
Muffin.
It's the Muffin, Muffin story. Well,
the funny thing is, though, that name then sort of spurred on after that so many bands like Hi everything but not just them, but even, you know, in the Norwich circuit that we were at, it just became this like thing that lots of people would just like do the double, and then even today when I see names like that, I'm like, Violet.
So you guys were absolute trailblazers in the Norwich scene.
They're pretty much
writing lists for punk bands.
I mean, like, obviously you guys were taking it all really seriously and you were writing songs straight away. Like, did you kind of both see this as a, like, this actually has legs to kind of go all the way?
Oh, I think we were definitely really ambitious from the start.
Yeah.
Me and Cherise particularly, that's why we became five into two, really. Obviously, it was always fun and it was never like super serious, but me and Cherie, we like a challenge, and that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to play music and we wanted to play gigs.
100%. Like I changed my uni plans for the band because we were in a really good position when I applied originally. And I just thought, I don't want to stop this now because it feels like we're on a good path. In my second year at university, we went to America. So I'm going to work
Amazing.
Back. So I'm thinking that we definitely did some kind of, I think we went on Steve Lamacq during that earlier bit that I just mentioned. So we were his new favourite band, whatever he was calling it at the time. And we went into BBC Broadcasting House and we met him. We gave him a T-shirt, which was way too big for him because I didn't realise how tiny he was. That was unfortunate. And he was really, that was the first single that we released ahead of the album being kind of signed and released. He played all the time. And I think that was big for us because we both listened to him a lot. And yeah, it was just ultra exciting because we thought it was great, but we were biased. So we were having a lovely time.
Sure, yeah.
But it was cool to hear it from other people. Who weren't our parents.
Yeah,
and we were starting to get fans and, just other people that were, like you say, that weren't our family, that really liked us, and we were starting to get better gigs and go outside of Norwich, and it was just felt like we could ride this out still.
Yeah.
If we stopped it now, it would be such a shame.
How were the fans? Did you pick up some fanatics along the way?
The weirdest one I can think of is in New York, actually.
Oh, really?
Because we didn't think that we would even no one would have even heard us over there. Mm. We went over to support the Nightingales, right. and we just never thought anyone would have ever heard of our music there. And this guy came up to us, and he had a folder of photos and like quotes that we'd said in interviews.
Oh,
gosh, or yeah. weird, like he'd pulled out some lyrics of certain songs and asked us what they mean.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And he wasn't like a journalist. He was just like a guy. It was so strange.
The closest that I ever experienced to fandom was a guy in the year below us at Sick Form who none of us knew, we had no connections to, and he had one of our songs as his song on his MySpace page.
Wow.
I mean, back then, yeah. that was huge.
That's a big decision to make, what your MySpace song is.
Says,
it took me ages.
Says a lot.
Always to think
you.
Of one.
Yeah,
you've absolutely made it at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably why we retired soon after. Yeah. Where do you go from there?
That's right, dizzy high.
I know.
Yeah. What about the first time you guys went into the studio? Tell me about that. Where did you first record, and what was that like?
Well, I just remember Purple Studios. That's the one we did with all five of us.
That's right.
And that was in Norwich. It was quite a blur, and I really remember we recorded, but we never listened back to the songs but after we'd like done our part or as a whole, which is so strange now. We just recorded.
Well, I guess we didn't
let
have,
them
like,
do their
a
thing
voice memo, right? We didn't,
right,
you know,
yeah, yeah,
we just played our songs. We never heard them, like you say, like out of that back at us.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we put it on in the car. And that was the first time on the car on the way home from the studio. And that was the first time I'd ever heard the song not playing it.
Yeah.
And it sounded awful. Like, it was really terrible. It's like, what the hell are you playing? Because everything's so messy and we don't know how to... In the rehearsal studio, we wouldn't know how to level it out so we could hear what everyone was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just quite an insight to like, wow, so that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not what I'm doing, kind of thing. It was funny.
Yeah.
That was kind of an ongoing theme with other members of the band until we got down to the two,
right.
Where we'd always be like, there's a sound. We don't really know what it is, but it's not what we're doing. So
yeah, and it's not on the beat. So how do we...
Yeah. Did we save up for that individually? Because I remember my thought when you first asked the question was of the second studio we went to, which we chose specifically because it was a guy from Magoo. He was wonderful and he was quite into our band anyway, or at least like knew who we were. And I remember at the end of the session presenting him with a jar of coins and being like, thank you for recording us. Because we had all just been like saving up for this recording session.
Incredible.
But I can't remember what we did with Purple Studios. I guess it was the same. And I think the reason we didn't listen back is because we went in really ambitiously saying we're going to do five songs and we only paid for a day.
Right, yeah.
So we were just like,
oh, God, yeah.
Get in. And we didn't know, like, we were like, oh my gosh, you're taking so long to set up the drum kit. Can you just let her on the kit? And he's like, oh, can you hear it? It's like, oh my gosh, why are we here?
Yeah, I know. We had no idea.
Sounds like drums. That'll do.
Yeah. I'm a little bit like that now, to be honest.
If it's not too delicate a question, can I ask why Violet ended?
Oh man, I knew you were going to get to this point. Right? We're both going to get like
it's
ultra emotional.
So
well, I have a warped sense of it, so let me think. So going back to the deferring of university, I ended up doing French, which I've used loads, obviously.
Great.
And,
yep.
and it was at that point, so we'd done the American tour, we'd done our second album, and we were really pushing that record. And then it came to the point where I was meant to be going abroad for a year.
Right.
So I'm guessing we had the conversation about it, which was probably awful between the two of us, about like, what do we do? Do we wait? Do we see, you know, if something happens? And I feel like, you know, to that end point, I would have been like, okay, fine, I'll defer again. Yeah. But I think at that time, yeah, I kind of made that move to Paris for the year. But we definitely didn't, you know, we didn't have an argument. We didn't not want to do it anymore. And I actually still did musical things over there. But then I guess at the same time, it was impossible for Fliss in that space to just stop writing and stop playing.
So like Robert, the lead singer of the Nightingales, he then, you know, he knew that Violet was coming to an end. Yeah. And I definitely didn't want to stop playing music and was totally happy for Cherie to go and do what she wanted to do. And so, yeah, it came at a good time, right. Really. Yeah.
And so what was that like, kind of writing those final set of songs and committing that final EP to tape?
It was really difficult, actually.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, we cried. Yeah.
We cried so much.
We cried recording it. We cried playing it. Ebony and Ivory was like our... We'd already joked about that as the dynamic. God, this is emotional. We'd already joked about the dynamic of that, you know, just even now, but just visually, Fliss and I were, you know, Ebony and Ivory, and that was our gig. And then we pushed that for the last record. We were like, it's just the two of us. That's it.
Cherie, you know, got a whole white closet
from Fliss's mum.
She just wore white and I just wore black.
Yeah.
It's good though.
Yeah, it's good. Wow.
And it's like Ebony and Ivory being the name of the last EP, right? And the title track is a track about your relationship.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, it's literally about the struggle of having to decide that you want to, that it's no more really, and having to say goodbye to it. And that was difficult. It was so emotional playing that song at the last ever gig that we did.
As the last song, which was foolish.
Oh, stupid, yeah.
And then like everything went black.
Yeah. We were very, as you can tell, we're very theatrical with our shows and very emotional as well. And it seems weird now when we say that back, like why we split up, it kind of feels like
a nothing.
Yeah,
it does.
There's no reason to split up, is it?
No, because I came back. What was I doing then? Just like trying to get a degree. Yeah.
And was it a good crowd for the last ever gig?
It was great. We did it at a puppet theatre.
Yeah.
In Norwich, which Why is quite there? An unusual venue for us. We wanted it to be seated.
Which nice.
Why we Great. Decided
it's
that.
The theatrical
we
side
did,
again.
That's it. Yeah. I think you can tell that Fliss did drama. And I was just like, yeah, this is great.
But I wasn't in the panto.
No. Yeah.
Cruelly overlooked. Yeah.
So rude. Yeah. I know.
So yeah, the second album, we did a seated album launch as well, and everyone wore black tie. And for the Ebony and Ivory, we did seated, and everyone, I guess we told them black and white. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But
I love the contrast between what your music sounds like and how sort of civilized like you tried to make everything.
Yeah, it was a clash. Yeah. It's great. We did so many speeches. It was so self-indulgent. Great. But that's what people were there for, to say bye to the band.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that was quite, it was quite a lovely thing to do, really.
It's interesting. On the flip side of that, just to tap into a tiny bit of drama, because you said you wanted a little, we had a completely different experience when we first went down to a two-piece.
So
rebranded, it was really... awful timing. We were midway through recording a record and we already had like the album plan, as you can imagine, like the you know, massive UK tour and stuff, and the other member decided she didn't want to be in the band anymore, so we kind of came together and we're just like, well, what are we gonna do? We're down to two. And I think both of us had a very like vicious reaction of well, we've shared this with so many people and actually we just keep coming back to the two of us. Maybe we should just give the two of us a go.
It was sad, really, because we became really good friends of her and it was really like a massive breakup. Because she wanted to leave and she also didn't want to remain friends.
So we actually didn't speak to her.
She wanted to have a complete different life.
Yeah.
God, that's tough.
So
it was so hard. It was awful. It's like a heartbreaker.
That was the awkward breakup answer you wanted.
Ivory light, ebony dark, ivory light.
We should start wrapping up, but what I'd like to know, how do you think being in a band when you were younger has shaped you as a person and contributed perhaps to what you do now?
I mean, it being a front woman in the band is just, it is right at the heart of me. That is just who I am. And I think it shines through the reason I like doing the interviews with other artists is because I like talking about tech and I want to hear that from other women and non-binary artists. So that was always really important to us when we were 16, and it's still really important to me now. Most of the artists that I write about are in that field, so I'm always trying to give a platform for that, and sort of seeing with the radio show as well, wanting to have like new music showcased and new artists. And it's nice seeing some of those DIY artists come through in venues that we'd played, and I have like odd anecdotes that I can share with them. You know, I interviewed Harkin for a magazine a while ago, and then I interviewed her again for The Other Woman. And after she's performed with Sleater Kinney for years. She was saying, I remember our interview. It was at the Lexington and we talked about my guitars. And I think that's quite special. It's almost in a weird way, which I've not thought of before, emanating what I found in Fliss, in that it was just another woman to talk to about music and nerd out about, who wasn't, the traditional trope of like a white male indie fan. And now most of my core friendship group is just rad women who love guitar music. So it's still right there. And to be honest, there probably isn't, maybe a month where Fliss and I don't make a joke about getting back together. So made it one this week.
Will it happen?
It was on my goals for this year.
Really?
It was on my little goal list. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so Fliss, how do you think the Violet years shaped you as a person and as a musician?
Completely changed my whole life, really. Like, mainly the forming friendships with other like-minded women, of course, finding a backbone, becoming stronger, having a platform to chat, we were basically chatting, in as well as doing melodies on stage. It just really kind of formed me into who I am now, of course, yeah. And the travelling, my eyes just completely opened, especially being from a tiny little village with two friends ever until sixth form. It was amazing. I talk about it all the time still to this day, like the best of times, really. Oh,
yeah.
Getting emotional.
Oh, I had a scratch. Sorry.
All right. No, I am.
It's pretty emotional. So that was Cherie, Percy and Fliss Kitson talking to me earlier this year. Huge thanks to them. Don't forget, you can listen to Cherie on The Other Woman Show on Soho Radio every Thursday. And you can hear Fliss on the latest Nightingales album, Four Against Fate, which is out now. So thank you so much for getting to the end of the very first episode of My Teenage Band. I'm attempting to take this whole thing semi-seriously, so I've got social media channels and everything. You can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at My Teenage Band, and you can get in touch at myteenageband@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your own tales of playing music of absolutely any genre and to any level of success when you were younger, so please do get in touch. My Teenage Band is presented and produced by me, Nick Taylor, and I also want to say a huge thank you to Anya Pearson, songwriter and guitarist in the band Dream Nails, for writing the podcast's wonderful jingle. Lead vocals on that, incidentally, were performed by Imo Berman from the band Trills. You can find links to both Anya and Imo's music in the show notes. I'll be back next week with more stories of youthful musical adventures. See you then!